Just this week, Tammy Baldwin, along with 18 other U.S. senators, sent a letter to the Food and Drug Administration in support of a ban on menthol cigarettes and flavored cigars. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And tobacco companies have directly marketed menthols to black people. The Kaiser Family Foundation says that Wisconsin has the highest rate of black adult smokers in the country, giving us the greatest racial disparity in smoking from coast to coast. So what are we going to do about that? You can join our conversation this half hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guests, Doug Jorenby is Director of Clinical Services for UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Doug, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
And also joining us this morning, Lorraine Lathan, founder and president of Jump at the Sun Consultants, which is the organization that administers the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network and the Wisconsin Tobacco Prevention and Poverty Network. Lorraine, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Lorraine, I will start with you and get your reaction to what the FDA proposed in April, a ban on menthol cigarettes, and what Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin seems to support along with 18 other U.S. senators. Why would that be important, or why wouldn't that matter to your work?
It's very important. We're thrilled that this has finally come to into existence. It's important because, first of all, let me tell you this. It's not surprising that we have these disparities in Wisconsin. There's so many other disparities that we're dealing with as it relates to education, income, healthcare access, and other issues that contribute to chronic disease and poor health. So it's important to have this ban. We have 45,000 African Americans that die each year as a result of tobacco. The ban is going to address issues of health inequities and also social justice. It's also a social justice issue.
Well, what is it about these menthol cigarettes, Lorraine?
The problem with the menthol cigarettes is very there's lots of issues. But menthol cigarettes, they are easier to start and they're more difficult to quit. The mentholated flavoring, it removes the harshness of tobacco. So it makes it easier to begin smoking. And also for many, many decades, the tobacco industry has targeted the African-American community for this particular product that is, again, more addictive. In Wisconsin, 88% of all black smokers smoke mentholated tobacco products.
Wow. And the numbers I have here from the PBS NewsHour, Lorraine, is that menthol cigarettes now account for more than one-third of all cigarettes sold in the U.S. There's a disparity there. And Doug Jorenby, in your position as the Director of Clinical Services for the UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, you can go back to 2009, I believe, right? That was the Tobacco Control Act, which would allow the FDA to regulate the tobacco industry. Why are we in 2022 right now talking about something that could address the racial disparities in smoking in Wisconsin? What's this process been like?
Well, it's it's the making of sausage in Washington, D.C., to use a really blunt metaphor. But there has been a tremendous amount of pushback. And, you know, the figure you just cited about how significant menthol sales are in terms of national tobacco sales is a big part of that, that the tobacco industry has pushed back in, very, very indirect and subtle ways for a number of years until finally this proposal came out to ban menthol as a flavoring. For very, very sound public health and scientific reasons. And now that's all become very overt. And, you know, the big tobacco companies are in the process of taking the FDA to court to try to stop that. So as compelling as that case is, and Ms. Lathan's group has done a great job of really highlighting the disproportionate impact it has on the black community, particularly in Milwaukee, it's not going to happen overnight. A lot of people are going to have to keep pushing to see this make progress.
So while the ability for the FDA to do this in 2000 occurred with legislation in 2009 and 2022, there is still work ahead. Some of it will be in the court. Some of it will be just public opinion. But going back to the PBS NewsHour's reporting on this here, the FDA says half of kids who smoke use menthols today. So, Doug, what other major challenges are health professionals facing when it comes to preventing kids from smoking today?
Well, you know, that's something where we've actually seen some progress in the short term. Certainly, as was mentioned earlier, you know, menthol is a gateway in that it's easier for kids to start that. It's less harsh. They're able to draw it more deeply into their lungs. But actually not with cigarettes, but with e-cigarettes, with vaping, and the fact that the federal government did move very quickly to ban flavorings in e-cigarette juice. We actually have seen a lot of progress because the sweet, the fruit, the sugar cereal dessert kind of flavors that e-juice was available in were really popular to adolescents and young adults, often cases people who had never used cigarettes at all. And those were actually taken off the market quite quickly. And some of the folks who had been using that were then falling back to menthol. So I think there's a precedent there. There's a pathway that we potentially can follow to help people get off these products or even more effectively to never start using them in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Doug Jordanby there directs clinical services for UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Also joining us, Lorraine Lathan, who directs the City of Milwaukee Tobacco Free Alliance and is in charge of the organization that administers the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network and the Wisconsin Tobacco Prevention and Poverty Network. And we invite you to the discussion as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So if we were to begin digging, Lorraine, I would be interested in knowing in your experience, in your work every day, what you see is what's causing some of these disparities in smoking habits in Wisconsin.
I would say we were fortunate to participate in a study by the State of Wisconsin's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program, where we looked at kind of the habits of tobacco retailers and we are in terms of marketing. So we learned that in the city of Milwaukee, that tobacco retailer density, that's the number of retailers per 1,000 residents, is much higher. It's twice as high as in the suburbs. So you have a population that is being constantly exposed to and inundated with tobacco marketing, outdoor marketing, tobacco discounts, anything that can be appealing, make tobacco products appealing. We're seeing tobacco products that are placed at eye level for children, near toys and candy and whatnot.
Still? So, still?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yes,
you mentioned that number two times as many in black neighborhoods compared to others in Wisconsin. But that goes back to the Kaiser Family Foundation numbers I have here that's based on the CDC data that says black adults in Wisconsin are around 2.5 times more likely to smoke than white folks in the state. But you also mentioned there's a context of racial disparities in Wisconsin that we're dealing with. But this one should be easy. This one should not be. I mean, smoking kills. So how do we go about stopping people from starting? And I go back to Doug's talk about the kids. What do you do, Lorraine, to keep kids away from nicotine and nicotine addiction?
We've been working with our youth. We have young people who engage in education and outreach to their peer groups. We're trying to change social norms around smoking, that it's not cool, you know, to smoke. And we know that it's an addiction. So with adults, we have been working to refer people to the Wisconsin Quit Line, get people into smoking cessation groups. Again, it is an addiction. Why are people smoking? There's so many different reasons. And we do a lot of focus groups. So when we talk to people, they talk about all of the pressure that life, the pressure of living that is causing people to smoke and kind of feel as if they're being relieved from some of that for a short period, and then they start smoking again. So with our young people, they're out educating. With adults, the ones that are smoking, we're trying to get them into programs that will help them quit and stay quit. So that's So that's some of the things that we've been doing many years now.
Lorraine Lathan, our guest, along with Doug Jornby, and we're taking a look at the racial disparities of smoking in Wisconsin and what can be done to curb them. If you want to know what it's like to try to quit smoking, hold your breath. Keep holding it. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now, if you are with the experience of quitting smoking, and smokers who have quit know this all too well, keep holding that breath. We'll be right back. I'm Lee Rayburn. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Still holding your breath. For nicotine addicts, trying to quit cigarettes can feel like drowning. It can feel like your skin is peeling off of you. It can feel like one thing you've got to do is light up. And so when we're talking about the smoking rates in Wisconsin, the racial disparities that we found from data from the Kaiser Family Foundation, we're talking about a two-pronged approach. The best way to quit smoking is to never start and never get the nicotine in your system. And after you do, well, then it is about dealing with an addiction, a physical addiction that will literally make you feel like you can't breathe. So our guests are Doug Jornby, Director of Clinical Services for the UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, and Lorraine Lathan, founder and president of Jump Sun Consultants, an organization that administers the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network and the Wisconsin Tobacco Prevention and Poverty Network. Join us, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. And Lorraine, a little bit more about these menthol cigarettes, as earlier this week, Senator Baldwin, along with 18 other senators, called on the FDA to go ahead and ban those menthol cigarettes. As Doug mentioned, this is now going to the courts where the cigarette companies will be battling the FDA. But what more can you say about this menthol ban and what it would do for smoking rates in Wisconsin and the racial disparity of smoking rates in Wisconsin?
Well, considering that 88% of the smokers, African-American smokers, smoke menthol-laden tobacco products, by banning menthol, that will save lives. It will prevent people from getting addicted, and it will help, hopefully, encourage people who are smoking to reduce and or quit smoking. So basically, it will save lives across the board in terms of with teens, young people, anybody who's smoking. It will help to save lives. I did want to make one important kind of remark about the ban in the tobacco industry.
Yes.
Because again, this ban is going to be very costly to the tobacco industry. Menthol is a moneymaker for the industry. And so now the tobacco industry is pushing this very false narrative that the proposed ban will lead to negative police interactions with African Americans.
How so?
So the truth of the matter is that the ban is against the manufacturers and the sellers of tobacco products. It's not against individuals. So we've been hearing these scare tactics that because of policing and enforcement, tobacco enforcement, more minorities are going to interact with the police as a result of this. And so I guess what I would say is to put this in perspective. We're talking about 45,000 African-American lives that are lost each year because of tobacco. And so we should not walk away from looking at implementing a ban because of this false narrative that, again, the tobacco industry has been putting out for quite some time now.
Because what this ban would be against the manufacturers and the cigarette companies, not the actual end users.
Correct.
Thank you for that. Correct. And Doug Jornby, I understand recent research from the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention is focusing on finding new ways to reach out through tobacco cessation outreach specialists. Specialists can help people quit smoking. How's that work?
Yeah, well, we've known for a long time that when you add counseling to medication, you were mentioning in the transition from the news break, you know, how incredibly difficult it is for somebody who's dependent on nicotine to just quit cold turkey to, in essence, throw away their cigarette or throw away their e-cigarette and go through withdrawal. So medication definitely helps reduce the withdrawal and craving, and that increases people's chances of success. But also when we do counseling, and particularly in the context that we're talking, when that counseling is tailored, so it's relevant to the community that's receiving it, it's culturally competent, if you will, it's even more effective. And we've seen success rates go up on the order of 2 to 3 times based on people who receive that kind of relevant counseling to help them quit.
So cessation outreach specialists who are culturally prepared, that are matched, that you can see yourself in others. But have you ever met a smoker who didn't want to quit, Doug?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're definitely out there. And, you know, a lot of people start as adolescents and it just becomes kind of a core part of who they are. And so the thought of getting particularly cigarettes out of their life just leaves this kind of hole in their identity. And that, as well as just the sheer difficulty of quitting and staying quit, can be really intimidating for people. But there's a lot of options, both in terms of, you know, as we were saying, the medication to help reduce some of the physical discomfort with it, but also, you know, whether it's support from other people that are going through the same thing and, you know, can be a guide and example for folks. Helping them do some active problem solving. There's a whole variety of ways that we can help people be more successful in making that decision that, you know, it's not an exaggeration for someone who uses tobacco. That is the single most powerful thing they can do to improve their health and quality of life.
That's Doug Jornby, Director of Clinical Services at UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Our other guest, Lorraine Lathan, founder and president of Jump at the Sun Consultants, the organization that oversees the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network and the Wisconsin Tobacco Prevention and Poverty Network. You are welcome to join us at 1-800-642-1234. And Lorraine Lathan, you talked earlier about working with kids to prevent starting smoking in the first place. But how, in your role with the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network and the Tobacco Prevention and Poverty Network in Wisconsin, how important are culturally competent smoking cessation specialists to help with your work, whether it's to prevent smoking to start or to help them quit?
It's very important. And thank you for asking that question. I think what happens is when you're helping someone to start their quit journey, it's important to be able to provide examples and to teach and support in a way that is relatable to that person. And so we've worked in terms of, we've used the Freedom from Smoking cessation that's developed by the American Lung Association. That's a curriculum that we've used to help people. And we've made changes to it to make sure that it speaks and resonates with the populations that we're working with. We've noticed that there are so many people who want to quit, as many as those who are saying, okay, I'm not quitting because I don't think I'm going to be successful. There's twice as many that are looking at saying, I want to be around for my daughter's wedding, to see my grandkids grow up. I just need help. I just need support. And so we've been able to support in smaller groups. People are able to work together and get that support from a neighbor, for instance, that has also started their quit journey. But making sure that it's relevant to them, that it speaks to them, and quite often it's kind of helping them to identify what are the triggers? What are the triggers that make you want to smoke? And then what kind of plan of action can you put in place to deal with those triggers?
And Lorraine mentioned it, and Doug, I'll ask you from your research, how many times do you have to quit before you can quit?
It varies tremendously from one person to the next. You know, I've worked with a lot of people that first time out, they get the pieces together and they're successful. We know from national data, it usually takes about 4 to 6 of what people self-describe as serious quit attempts before they're quit for good. And that's a testament to, you know, how tenacious a dependence nicotine creates. But it also, it shows that it's a learning experience. You know, there are plenty of people who are able to quit for a couple of weeks and then, you know, it be in Wisconsin, they go out to a tavern on Friday night with their friends who are still smoking, and somehow they find a cigarette in their hand, and they learn not to let that trip them up the next time. So having that ability, and I agree with what Ms. Layton was saying, that sometimes, you know, having peers, having neighbors, having friends that can help you through this process, you see that as a learning experience, not as a personal failure, and that makes a world of difference.
Doug, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Director of Clinical Services for UW-Madison Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, Lorraine Layton, thank you so much for your time and information as well.
Thank you.
Lorraine is a founder and president of Jump of the Sun Consultants, the organization that administers the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network and the Wisconsin Tobacco Prevention and Poverty Network. Ahead this hour, we're exploring how recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions could impact tribal nations here in Wisconsin. And we invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Your news is next. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.